This is the EWN Radio Network.
Hi, welcome to Empowering Motherhood Radio. This is Tara Darlington, and I'm here to shine the light for you on your journey. You can listen to our back podcast at empoweringmotherhoodradio.com, and you can sign up there to our themed collection so you can just get the emails with the topics that have interest to you at this moment in your life. Now, today, as part of the Mum's Toolbox, we're talking about going through all a whole heap of natural therapies. And today we're talking to Jacinda Janesh about acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine. There's so many ways that acupuncture and Chinese medicine can help you. More and more people are sort of going to have acupuncture these days. When I started having acupuncture about 15, 16 years ago, or a bit longer actually, most people thought it was a bit strange, but it's becoming a lot more mainstream now because the benefits are so huge and the number of health issues that it can help you with are unbelievable, not to mention how old it is. So welcome to the show, Jacinda. How are you going?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. So let's just start with, how old is Chinese medicine?
Well, the texts will all tell us that Chinese medicine has a 2,000-year-old history, so dating back quite a while.
Yeah, so it's not something that's just been plucked out of the air today. It's just something that I guess in the West we're becoming a lot more aware of, and a lot more aware of alternatives for all the different health problems that we have and how good it can be. It's been my... it was my main health care that I used, you know, for about 15 or 20 years. So way back to morning sickness and various other things that I needed to deal with. So just tell us a little bit about yourself. What was your first interest in traditional Chinese medicine? Did you grow up with it, or it's something you became interested in later on in life?
No, I grew up with it. I'm Chinese Australian, so my mother's Chinese and my dad's English Australian, and he was very much into the martial arts and kung fu. So acupuncture and Chinese medicine is kind of uniquely tied to the martial arts as well. And growing up with a Chinese mother, whenever we got sick, it was not weird for us to take herbs or get some form of cupping treatment to try and help us get over our flus or colds or coughs. And so growing up, that was just sort of, it was just what we did. And then when it was time for me to kind of decide what I wanted to do when I finished school, I kind of didn't know what I wanted to do, but I did know that I wanted to get into some form of medicine. So I looked up Chinese medicine in the UAC guide, and it was there at UTS, so I signed up for that. And then, yeah, the rest is history, really.
Yeah, right. And did you have a particular interest? Because I know now you have a particular interest in pregnancy and birth and all things women's health. Did you have a particular interest in that originally, or that's something that developed as you had your own pregnancy and your child?
The interest in women's health came from my own personal experience with horrendous period pain. So through uni, I managed that with herbs and acupuncture and overcame my need for prescriptive painkillers to deal with my period pain. So that was kind of my introduction into the power of Chinese medicine and helping gynecology. And then my interest in how acupuncture and Chinese herbs can help with pregnancy and postnatal care came about, as you said, from my own pregnancy and also my work as a doula as well, and how I can help my clients have a better birth and have a better postnatal recovery as well.
Yeah, because they're so linked too, which isn't really recognised by a lot of stories in the media and conversations, that how linked all of these things So before, I want to ask you lots more questions about all of that stuff, but let's go back to the beginning. So, you know, period pain, just that general women's health. How is it, you know, what's Chinese medicine, like when you're treating somebody, what sort of questions are you asking? What is the procedure and, you know, what are you looking for and how is it that Chinese, what you do can help someone, say with symptoms with their period, whether it's period pain or bloating or bad moods, emotional overload, all those things that can come with it, or irregular periods as well?
Well, I mean, I can only speak from my own and what I do here in my own clinic. If a patient were to come to me with, say, an irregular cycle, I would go through a whole lot of questions, not only on how irregular her menstrual cycle is and, you know, how long she bleeds for and is that painful and does she get any PMS symptoms, but we go through a whole lot of other questions that might seem on the surface to be completely unrelated. So the whole questioning that I give to my patients takes almost, in that first consultation, an hour. So we go through everything from, you know, how well does the patient sleep, to how regular do you get your headaches, what is your digestion like, how regular are your bowels. I ask what they normally eat in a day, how much water they're drinking. After all the questions are done, I then feel their pulses on both wrists and I look at their tongue. And the pulse and tongue is our inspection is very much, it helps us diagnostically in terms of where to go to in terms of what acupuncture points to select and also what herbs to use and what would be appropriate for the patient.
So tell us a bit more about the reading the pulse. It's fascinating. It's like, I mean, I've had it done 100 times to myself, but when you watch it, it's like watching someone play a finely tuned instrument or something, feeling different things, aren't you? Give us a bit more explanation. Of that, because people who have never been to Chinese medicine or any, you know, natural therapies, you know, there's that barrier, I think, to going with not really understanding what's going on and what to expect. So just take us through a little bit, you know, in layman's terms, what are you actually feeling and looking for there?
Okay, so, I mean, commonly when I feel a person's pulse who has no idea about Chinese medicine and they're coming to me for the first time, when I ask to feel both of their pulses at the same time, they look at me and after a little while and I'm still feeling, they look at me and they go, can you even find it? Am I dead? Do I have a pulse?
Yeah.
So what you have to understand is to read the pulse takes, we're not just feeling for the rate. So in Western medicine, they're more concerned about, you know, how many beats per minute is this pulse beating at? We are not too concerned with that. It does help us a little bit, but when I feel the pulse, essentially I'm feeling for how much strength does this pulse have? Do I have to feel really deeply before I get a good kind of feedback, a good kind of beating or pulse underneath my fingertips? Or as soon as I touch it, do I get some strength? So initially I'm feeling for a weak or a strong pulse. And then I go into a finer, detailed palpation of, it's hard to describe over a conversation because you kind of need to be there in person. But when I feel the pulse, I'm feeling both the left and right side at the same time. And I've got three fingers of both of my hands on each side. So I'm feeling six different positions at the same time at a superficial level, and then I press a bit deeper to feel a deeper level. And the idea behind that is that every position and every level reflects a different organ system within the body, and we're feeling for what we call a quality. And there are over like 50 different types of qualities that someone can feel in the one pulse, but and they're often described as wiry or thready or slippery or soggy.
Yeah, that's the one I remember. I think that's what I, my tendency is a slippery pulse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because slippery pulse usually indicates pregnancy, Tara.
Oh, right. Well, with six kids, maybe that's why I've got tend to have a slippery pulse. Yes. And I tend to probably go and have acupuncture more when I'm pregnant.
Yeah, so the pulse descriptions are kind of more, they conjure up a picture of what you're actually feeling. And again, it's just, it all helps us diagnostically to figure out what's happening to a person's circulation system within their organs and within their centre.
That's with Chinese medicine, you're working on the meridians, aren't you, mostly? So that's a part of the, you know, the energy system, and those channels of energy which move, you know, are related to certain organs. And, you know, tell us a little bit about the meridians and how it works with the meridians.
So when someone gets acupuncture, we say if someone was coming, again, for an irregular cycle, for example, we wouldn't necessarily stick needles into their abdomen near their ovaries or their uterus, because the meridian system works such that it forms a circuit system around the body. So all of the meridians are more like channels that circulate this chi or this vital energy or life or warmth or circulation or whatever you want to call it. And it flows from your center, from your vital organs, and it flows out to all of your extremities. So the meridians are a way of accessing internally from almost an external source. For example, someone with an irregular cycle, I might needle somewhere around their ankles and then somewhere around their elbows to affect the circulation within their center.
That's the best description that I can give. Yeah, no, that's good. It's good because it's a whole different way of looking at the body to what people are used to if they go, you know, to a conventional doctor and have their blood pressure checked and their pulse checked for the rate, and, you know, look at the back of the throat to see if there's any swelling, you know, and 5 minutes of questioning. So, you know, it's quite a different way of looking at the body. It's just good to give people a bit of an idea of that. So we're going to have a little break in a minute, and I just want to come back and talk about the types of, when we're talking about that, you know, cycles and the general women's health, just want to go over a few of the key things that Chinese medicine and acupuncture are particularly good at that you treat quite a bit in your practice. So just hold on there for a moment and we'll be back in a sec.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
We're here with Jacinda Janesh from Point Specific Acupuncture, and we're talking about how Chinese medicine can help you with all sorts of issues around women's health. So what are some of the main things? So we've obviously talked about, you know, period pain and symptoms that come with periods or irregular periods. What are the other types of things that you generally see quite a bit of in your practice that you know, acupuncture and Chinese herbs are really particularly good at helping with as far as women's health goes, like getting pregnant, for example?
Yeah, so the majority of the clients that we see are for fertility. So they're usually having problems falling pregnant. Some of them have already been to IVF and have done a few cycles and it still hasn't worked. So they start to seek alternatives. So about 90% of the patients that both my husband and I treat are for fertility. And the rest are, I see a majority of pregnant women through their through their whole pregnancy, whether it be first trimester, nausea, vomiting, constipation, or the last trimester in terms of helping them try and avoid an induction or just basic labour prep treatments. But Chinese medicine is a complete form of medicine, just like Western medicine is a complete form of medicine, where you can get medicines for a sore throat or a throat infection, to you can get medicines for high blood pressure. Chinese medicine works exactly the same. So we can treat everything and anything, which a lot of people are unaware of. They think, oh, acupuncture is just for a sore back, or Chinese herbs is good for, in this case, fertility. But we see a whole range of patients for all sorts of things.
Well, it's all about bringing the body into balance and bringing the energy, you know, using that energy so the body can heal itself and everything works properly and you feel healthy and great, isn't it? So with your with fertility, what's going on with most of the patients that come to see you? I mean, there's so much talk, there's almost a hype around fertility at the moment. You know, what's the main, there's obviously some lifestyle factors. What are the factors that you're seeing, and what are the, from a Chinese, from a layman's point of view and from a Chinese medicine point of view, what's going on with a lot of the women that you're seeing with infertility, and how, you know, and what are you doing to help that?
That requires a very long answer, but I will try and make it very succinct. Let's see. For some women, their problems started back in their teens when their period first started. So a lot of these women who are coming in their early to late 30s have already had, say, 15 years of period issues, of irregular cycles that have been band-aid over by the pill, or they've had excruciating period pain, endometriosis, again band-aid over with by the pill, and they've ignored their issues, or they've thought that there's nothing that they could do about them until it was time to have a baby. And in Chinese medicine, how healthy our menstrual cycle is a reflection on our fertility health, and our health in general is also a sign of how fertile we will be. So for some women, it's more the fact that they are so busy and caught up with their lives of going to work and going to the gym and coming home and having a tidy house and keeping up appearances, that they give me the excuse that they have no time to eat, or they don't eat well. They don't eat breakfast because there's no time for breakfast. They will snack through the day because they don't feel that hungry, and they eat in very late at night. For some women, it's just that they don't drink enough water, which seems like a very basic concept. But when you think about what nourishes our ovaries and what nourishes our endometrium is blood circulation, and that the blood volume is basically 85% water, if you are not drinking enough water, your blood volume is going to be quite sticky and quite thick, and therefore the circulation of that blood to the most important organs for conceiving is going to be extremely slow, and therefore the ovaries and endometrium are not going to be getting enough of that vital blood circulation it needs to conceive. So, I mean, there's a whole heap of other reasons, but...
But the main point there is that we need to deal with these things. So, you know, for mothers listening who have girls or teenagers, you know, if they have got period issues, it's something that needs to be sorted out sooner rather than later. Chinese medicine is fantastic at helping with that.
That's right. That's exactly right. I mean, a lot of the women that we see start out with having menstrual problems, and then later on they also develop digestive problems. So then it's this whole cycle of, you know, her period's really bad and then her digestive system's really bad. So even though she's trying to eat right, that whole nutrient and life absorption she's trying to get from her food is not going to be as efficient as it would be if everything was just sorted out and working really well. And when we're talking about creating another life, all systems need to be working efficiently so that you can grow a life within you.
Mm. Yeah, it sounds so simple when you put it like that.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, a lot of what we counsel our patients on are really, they are basic concepts, but they get lost amongst the whole scientific nature that Western medicine has focused our bodies on, making it seem that to get pregnant requires blood tests and ultrasounds and all of these fancy Western medical equipment, but they often ignore fundamental concepts that make us and keep us alive, and that is good food, good water, good amount of sleep, not spending too much excess energy in areas that don't need to be spent. Like what I said, you know, keeping up appearances and keeping your house tidy when you really should be going to bed at 10 o'clock at night.
Mm, that's the busy being busy, isn't it? So everybody's so busy and rushed and, you know, hormonally that keeps us in fight and flight and, you know, that's a whole nother conversation.
Right. Yep.
But, you know, and that also ties into, you know, women honouring their period and resting through their period. I actually learnt that from my Chinese doctor from years ago, you know, about and the whole conversation around tampons and all that advertising that we've had that, you know, don't let your period get in the way, keep going, just use a tampon, and rather than, we actually do need to rest at that phase, don't we?
Yes, we do. And it's the same, I mean, it's the same concept in terms of in winter when we're told to take a Codral and soldier on. When we are sick and unwell, it is our body's way of telling us that we need to rest. When we have a period, it is our body's way of telling us that we need to rest. And we are all brought up to believe that we should ignore our bodies and the signs that they are giving us and just keep going. But there comes a point when your body won't be able to keep going, and therefore you're going to end up really, really sick.
I actually give my daughter the day off with the first or second, whichever is a heavy day of her period. She just has the day at home in bed, which, you know, sounds like she must be having a lot of time off school, but she's not, because it doesn't always fall on a school day. If you think that you've got 12 periods a year and then you have school holiday, you know, it might turn out to be 4 or 5 or 6 days off for the whole year, which means that, because we're getting more and more exhausted and depleted and run down. And that's another thing, area where Chinese medicine is really good at bringing the energy, your energy up, bringing your life force and your chi up. And that creates a lot of problems when that's low as well, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
So I mean, talk a little bit about that, like, with like postnatal depression, you know, feeling tired and lethargic all the time. A lot of women are struggling with that, which obviously follows on from all that we've been talking about. But talk a little bit about that in terms of explaining qi and that sort of lack of energy with those and those symptoms that come out, such as being lethargic or tired or even depression.
In the postnatal period, do you mean?
I guess particularly in the postnatal period, but then, you know, it can linger on right into as your children get older, because you haven't dealt with it, you know,
place. Yeah, so, I mean, it all stems from, I guess I have to backtrack. When we are pregnant and when we are in labor, in Chinese medicine we say it takes a lot of qi and it takes a lot of blood to birth a baby. You know, a labor is called labor for a reason. It's hard work bringing a baby into the world. So when we have finally given birth, women are in a state of qi and blood depletion. And then when a woman, if she chooses to breastfeed, that also depletes her. We say it breast milk is born from blood in Chinese medicine, and it takes, what's the saying? I think it's two parts of qi to make one part of blood. So when you're in this state of depletion already, and then you're trying to breastfeed a baby, which takes a lot of qi and it takes a lot of blood, and you're already in a state of depletion, if you're not getting an appropriate amount of rest, and if you're not looking after yourself in terms of diet and fluid, then you are going to constantly be in a state of depletion. And not only that, we all know how sleep deprived the parents of newborns are, so we're not then also able to fully rest and recharge. So for at least a year, it is really normal for a mum to feel that tiredness and that lethargy, because she's not getting enough sleep. She's probably not looking after herself very well because all of her focus is on the baby. And particularly if she hasn't really honoured that postnatal period, and has, you know, within a week or two, she's up and about and she's going shopping and she's meeting up with friends, or friends are coming over to look at the baby. And if she's just putting too much pressure on herself in those early stages, it can just deplete her even more. So Chinese medicine can really help in that postnatal period by helping the mother restore and replenish that which was lost through the birth. And also just, I mean, I know I personally just gently remind these new mothers that it's really okay to rest when the baby rests. It's really okay to just sit down and have a cup of tea, or just, you just take the time out that you need to really rest. A lot of women feel really guilty for some reason that they're sitting down and supposedly not doing anything, but I think it's really important for women
to realize
that,
they're
not doing nothing. They're looking after their baby, and that takes a lot of work, and it is really depleting. So I think just reinforcing that message to women that they don't need to be a superwoman and have all the dishes done and have all the laundry done and all of that kind of stuff. Like, all of it can wait. It's all going to be there when you get
it
up.
Sure will. Well, that's the whole confinement period, isn't it, which the Chinese themselves are, you know, it's quite a tradition. And I think the West have sort of given that the flick, but, you know, that really needs to come back. And I always say to my clients, I rested for a month with six, with my six. So, and it's not so much about looking after ourselves, but letting other people look after us. You know, and in that is someone coming to look after the baby, so you can go and have acupuncture and really doing what you need to be doing to get your energy up. So you can see how that, you know, with so much postnatal depression around, you know, if women are depleted every month through their teen years, and then they get pregnant and then they have the baby, and the depletion just continues until there's almost nothing left. Can you get nothing left? Can you get almost nothing left? What happens to your body then?
Then you're nearly dead. So, but in terms of depression and how one would cope mentally, it is all about that. You know, when we're, say, for example, tired, we're not the most resilient emotionally. Even just if I've had a bad night's sleep, I know I'm not going to be mentally as strong as I was had I had a really good night's sleep. So when you take into account, you know, years of menstrual trouble and then maybe a really hard labour and then not giving yourself enough time to rest in the postnatal period, breastfeeding on top of that, or just having a really busy lifestyle postnatally, you are in a major state of depletion. So mentally and emotionally, you're not going to be as resilient as you were. Because to be emotionally, mentally strong and grounded, you need a strong foundation of qi for that.
And a lot of your clients come to you regularly, don't they, throughout their pregnancy, just to, and that would be one of the main goals, I guess, to maintain that energy throughout the pregnancy and keeping everything balanced and ready for the birth?
Yeah, so I see women in the first trimester roughly either weekly if they're having some pretty bad nausea, or I see them fortnightly until about 12 weeks, and then I see them monthly until 36 weeks, and then I see them weekly to help with labour preparation and labour encouragement.
Well, we're going to have another break and we're going to talk more about that, all the different things that Chinese medicine is great for pre-labour, turning babies and helping you not go way, way overdue, etc. So we'll be back in a second. We're going to talk more about that.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
So we're here with Jacinda Janesh from Point Specific, and I want to come onto that topic of the amazing things that acupuncture and Chinese medicine can do to help basically minimise your risk of labour. So, you know, what we're wanting is a safe labour for the mother and for the baby, and a straightforward natural birth is usually, unless there's some other complication presenting, the best way forward for that. Now, we've had an exciting time at yoga. Jacinda and I have a lot of mutual clients as we work in the same area. She had her baby was breached. She went to see Jacinda. She was doing her moxa. All the rest of the class was getting weekly updates of the baby moving 45 degrees each week until the baby was up the right way, and then I got a lovely text message saying she'd had a great birth and everything was fantastic. Although the baby did come a few weeks early, I thought she was in labor in yoga, because she was it's very interesting because the girls to swear and bitch and moan in their last class. I think, oh, she's going to have the baby any day now. And, you know, as if I'm making them do something they don't want to do, but they've come to yoga and they're doing it. It's quite amusing. So tell us, let's go through a couple of the key things. So the position of the baby, which can give you a chance to tell us about the moxa, is one great thing that you can help with as well, isn't it?
Sorry, Tara, you broke up a bit then. Can you repeat the question?
Oh, okay, so just tell us about how you can help women. So obviously bringing the baby into the optimal position for birth is anterior position is what we want for a nice, easy, safe birth for the mother and the baby. So tell us a bit about moxa and acupressure points and how you help with can help with turning babies.
So with breech babies, I use moxa. And moxa is made from a herb called Artemisia vulgaris, or mugwort in English, and it is dried and rolled into a cigar-shaped form. It is then lit at one end, and we hold that lit end over, not on the skin, but just over to form or to create a really nice heat or warmth at the pinky toe of the woman. And we hold it there for about 20 minutes on each toe, and it's said that that point is for malposition of the fetus. So to help turn a breech baby, I show the mothers how to use the moxa, but a course of moxa treatment for breech turning is 10 consecutive days of the moxa. So I show them how to do it and give them sticks to take home, and they do it themselves for the 10 days.
That becomes hubby's job, really, doesn't it?
Yes, it is better if the husbands can do it. Although it's really funny, some husbands will still moan and whine and complain about how they have to do it for their wives. And I really find that very strange.
That would be with their first baby only. I'm sure once they've had a baby and they want a really stress-free birth, they'll be happy to sit there.
So that's for the breech. But if someone came in with a posterior baby, I wouldn't necessarily do the moxa, but I would needle the point that we would use for the moxa. because, as I said, that point is for any kind of malposition of the fetus. So if a woman comes in and her baby's been posterior for a little while and is really stuck in that position, then I'll often use that toe point in combination with some other points around the ankles and the hands and the elbows.
And posture can have a bit of effect on posterior baby as well, can't it? I'm always
working
on the girl's posture at yoga. That's slumping on the couch, you're not allowed to do. You have to sit on the floor and sit up nicely.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
So how does that actually work? How does that actually what's that? What role is that? What's going on that the baby, you know, that helps the baby to move?
It's more to do with the meridian pathways of the point at the toe and its effect on the uterus.
Right, okay. Yeah, that's interesting. It's like a magic trick, you know. It's hard from a Western point of view to get your head around how that could do anything, isn't it? But I've used it myself. But also I had used the Moxa with my last baby. I was just so exhausted for obvious reasons. 6 pregnancies finally did it to me. And I just needed to get my energy up drastically and quickly. I was so exhausted. So that's interesting how that works. And then the other things that you can help with, so there's 2 other things to bring up with regards to late pregnancy coming into birth. And one is we really want to minimize risk so that we can have a straightforward, safe birth. So, you know, high blood pressure, swelling, you know, fluid retention, any other sort of, and sometimes girls get the itchy skin where the liver is starting to struggle a little bit, all those sort of complications, which generally a lot of people told, oh, well, that's normal in pregnancy, don't worry about it, you know. It's normal, but it's not. It's only normal because a lot of people have it. But if we can lower those risks in the body, then you're more likely to have a nice, safe, easy birth. So those type of ailments you can help a lot with as well, can't you?
We can. It's interesting, though, the women that I see quite regularly throughout their pregnancy, particularly those that already have a baby, so I'm seeing them their second time, or as in, I hadn't seen them for their first pregnancy because they didn't know about me. So I'm seeing them for the first time during their second pregnancy. The ones that have had issues with, say, high blood pressure, they had to have been induced for their first pregnancy because of high blood pressure. When I see these women regularly throughout the pregnancy, it's almost, well, we always say that Chinese medicine is a preventative medicine, and that's what I'm finding when I see women throughout their pregnancies, that they don't get anything that they got the first time around. So they won't get gestational diabetes. They won't get the high blood pressure. They won't get the itchy skin. So I'm finding that's more and more common, which is great.
Yeah, which is not only making their pregnancy more comfortable but making, you know, really increasing that probability right up high to having, you know, the birth that they want, or just an easy, exactly, safer birth, the body doing its thing, which is, you know, one of the key things that we want, because you're also, you know, if you're going to have a shorter, easier labour, you're also going to lose less energy, aren't you?
That's
and
right.
So that plays out the other end of not being as exhausted, and that's one thing that women who do have a really great birth do report. They're on a high. They don't feel as exhausted as women that have had a longer, more complicated labour.
Yeah, all connected.
Yeah. And then what about induction? So there's 2 things. There's either trying to, you know, do that acupuncture beforehand to get all the energies right for your body to go into labor, and then there's, you know, me with my first pregnancy, as soon as they told me I had to be booked in for induction 16 and a half years ago, I was off to acupuncture every day. I wasn't going to let that happen. So, you know, there's the 2, there's the before and the due date and the after the due date. So tell us a little bit about what Chinese medicine, how you look at that. What makes, there's certain things that happen in the body, aren't there, that help the body to go into labour. Tell us a little bit about that and how acupuncture helps.
Well, for a mother to go into labour, we say that she needs a plentiful amount of qi and blood to be directed towards the uterus. So for the women who are or have been in a state of depletion, say they've fallen pregnant quite quickly after giving birth to a previous child, they're already, as we mentioned before in our conversation, they would be in a state of depletion already, and then they've fallen pregnant on top of that. So throughout their pregnancy, they're constantly in this state of deficiency. So my treatment for them would be trying to make their body as strong as possible, and in that way their body is going to initiate labour by itself when it's strong enough to do so, when it's strong enough to get itself into labour. It's easier to do that when I see them in those weeks before this impending due date, because there's less pressure for the mother. But I do see the occasional woman who is due in a couple of days' time and she's being threatened with induction, or maybe she's already passed her due date and again she's being threatened with induction. For those women, it's more just about calming their mental state so that their body can really just do what it needs to get itself into labour. But those women need more treatments in quicker succession, rather than the women that I see in the month before their due date. I can see them once a week and then I can counsel them on different foods that they can eat, different recipes they can try, different activities they can do to help really build their qi and blood so they can get themselves into labour.
Oh, beef tea, one of the things, that's what I was drinking. My mum always makes me beef tea.
Good old beef
as
tea.
I come up to, that last month of that last couple of weeks, or usually I went overdue with all of mine. So as soon as that due date hits, mum seems to arrive with a pot of beef tea.
Delicious. Yeah. Usually
in a nice, beautiful, ornate teacup.
Yeah, because it makes it taste from my mum. Better.
Yeah, with salt.
No, the Chinese but it holds get a lot the of pork, pork trot. Pig trotter soup or something is another common one in the Chinese community.
Right. Just what you feel like when you're overdue. But we don't eat as much of that stuff now as well. So it's another reason why we're sort of slowly, you know, depleting our energy all the time, isn't it?
Mm, yeah. I mean, I know a lot of my clients are eating salads and lots of fruit and things that we are told are really healthy, but they're not so appropriate in terms of trying to build and restore our vital energy and our blood circulation that we need, say, in this instance, to birth a baby. We really need those long, slow-cooked soups and stews and things with dishes with meat on the bone where the marrow can really leach out into the juices. It's those kind of meals that are really restoring for a woman.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. And that's what we need to drop off at her house after she's had the baby too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Getting back to some good old traditional things in a way. There's quite a lot. I mean, basically the moral of the story is there's quite a lot that women can do. And this is what I'm always trying to reiterate to them, that to be proactive about their health. And as we've talked, we've gone all the way back from, you know, from the beginning of menstruation right through, and that, you know, if you do have teenagers or girls, sorting out their menstrual cycles, if it's not, if it is painful, if it is irregular, if there are, chronic headaches and things, then something's out of whack and you can fix that, because you're only going to have to deal with it at some stage later if you don't deal with it now. And I think that one of the interesting things, the accumulative effect of the depletion for women, and that seems to be a big problem for a lot of women. We're going to have another quick break, and what I want to finish off on is all those other sort of ailments, that health ailments that people have or problems they have with their children, as you were talking earlier, coughs and colds, allergies, all that sort of stuff. So we'll just have another quick break and come back and talk a bit more about general health stuff.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
If we start looking at a broader, range of health issues, just talk about, did people bring their children to you for allergies or digestive problems or things like that, asthma?
Yeah, they do.
Themselves or their children, anyone in the family, really.
So with kids, I will treat I've treated newborns, like any age can be treated. Often the question is, how can they lie still with the acupuncture needles in? But to treat a kid or a baby with acupuncture is extremely quick. It is not like treating an adult. There's no what we call needle retention time. The needles don't need to stay in. And the reason for that being is that newborns and children in general they are abundant in qi. Their qi is very easily manipulated. So they don't need to, for an adult, they need to lie on the table with the needles in place for 20, 25, 30 minutes. But with a child, the needles I put them in, I stimulate them and I take them out. So the whole needling experience for the child is literally 10 seconds. But I see kids for a whole heap of reasons. When they're newborns, it's usually for colic or reflux or those kinds of really common newborn issues. It's important that the mother comes to that treatment as well, because in Chinese medicine we do not see a separation between the newborn and the mother. The newborn and the mother are still one. So whatever she is eating and how she is emotionally is going to affect the health of that newborn as well. So to treat a newborn is also to treat the mother at the same time, and that might be to give her herbs, or it might just be finding out what she's eating and seeing if I can advise her maybe to eat something a bit different. For slightly older children, I commonly see them for constipation or eczema, asthma, recurrent tonsillitis, or what's the other thing? Some of them are getting, say, croup, or like just getting sick all the time and finding it really hard to get over the sickness or the illness, the cold or the cough, before getting something new on top. So I see kids for all different types of reasons.
So how do you say, like, that, like getting sick all the time? What sort of things are going on in their body there that they're getting sick all the time?
Usually it's a combination of the children not eating the appropriate food, and also the parents aren't really giving their child enough time to rest. So they're sending them off to school too early, or they're still putting them into swimming lessons when they really should just be resting to give their body enough time to get over being sick. So when you don't give your child enough rest, it's exactly like an adult. You're depleting them before they have enough energy to really get over their sickness.
And again, we're sort of marketed to that we should take something and, you're a good mum if you give your child this or that, that gets rid of their temperature, gets their illness, and they sleep well.
Yeah.
But you're also then, you give them something. If they're not feeling well, then they can quickly be up and running around when they should be resting. So it's, that's another Band-Aid approach that a lot of people think they're doing the right thing. But underneath that, the problem's still there and, perhaps even compounding.
Yeah, I mean, often I'm also explaining to the parents what it means to have a fever, for example. Often when they come to me and they've been sick for a little while, I will ask them, how did it first start? What were the first symptoms? And the first symptom usually for a child is a fever or a temperature. And it's usually the only sign, especially when your child can't talk, it's usually the only sign that a parent has that their child is unwell. And for a lot of parents, we are told that when they have a temperature, we give them Panadol or we give them Nurofen or we give them something to stop the fever. So a lot of the time I have to really explain to the parents what it means when your child has a fever and what you're doing when you're stopping that fever. And the point is that the fever is a sign that the immune system is working, that their body is doing what it's meant to do and it's fighting the pathogen that's entered. So when you give them Panadol and you stop the fever, you're essentially stopping the immune response, which is going to be fine for the next 4 hours. But what that means is the pathogen has enough time to breed in the body, which means the fever is going to come back because the immune system is still recognizing that that pathogen is there and it needs to be fought. And every time you give them something to stop that fever, you are prolonging their course of illness. So for a lot of the kids that I see, it's about treating the kid, but then also encouraging the parent to be a little bit more confident with letting the fever run its course.
There's a real fear around fevers, isn't there?
There is, yeah. And I think a lot of it is that they think that, you know, a high fever is going to cause epilepsy or it's going to cause brain damage. But really the only danger of a fever is dehydration. So for as long as your child is drinking enough water and is passing enough urine, then to let that fever run its course is actually okay, and it's going to strengthen their immune system after they've gone through that fever. But the more you keep stopping that immune response, the more you're weakening your child's immune system.
And so then when children have had that ongoing illness, they can come to you and do you use a combination of herbs and acupuncture, or do you do mostly acupuncture with the kids? Or
I do a combination. Most of the kids I've been seeing for a really long time, and so they're quite used to taking herbs, even though they taste really yucky. A lot of them realise very soon that they feel so much better when they take my herbs, and I'm even at the point now where some parents bring their kids in and they tell me that their kid was begging their parents to make an appointment for them because they need Jacinda's herbs and they need a treatment from Jacinda, which is really
lovely. My kids do that with cod liver oil. I've got a couple of them that really needed oils, and they're the ones, they would almost chase me around the house for it. And I give it to them straight off the spoon because the same thing, they've always had it. So I don't have to hide it or cover it up or give them some other version of it. Like you said, you grew up with it. The more you introduce this stuff early, the less, you know, the easier it is.
The less they just struggle, when they're older.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. Very interesting. All right, I want to finish off with one more thing, which is taking us to the whole other end of the women's cycle, which is, we've only sort of got 5 minutes or so, you know, heading right through the other end to menopause. Do you see women for menopause?
We see lots of women for menopause and menopausal symptoms. We can help a lot with all of the associated symptoms, the hot flushes, which are really common, or the night sweats. Some women have their menstrual cycles become really erratic when they're going through that perimenopausal period, you know, with flooding or with just really irregular. So we can help in that respect and help them, I guess, just make that transition into menopause and the postmenopausal phase just as easy as possible for them, so that they don't have to resort to HRT or a hysterectomy or things like that.
And so do you find, I imagine there's a very strong link between people that have had, you know, normal health with their menstrual cycle and right through their life, that menopause you know, they're less likely to get menopausal symptoms. So back to looking after ourselves right through. Yep.
That's right. Another reason why, you know, the teenagers with horrendous period stuff should be really getting it treated appropriately as soon as possible, because a lot of the women who are having, say, the flooding periods where they're really considering a hysterectomy, when I question further, you know, their menstrual cycle history, they're always the women who always had horrendous period pain, or they'd always had a heavy period to begin with, and these things weren't addressed, or they were addressed, but it was addressed with inappropriate medicines that just cover it up, like the pill. So, yeah, again, if we can kind of treat these things earlier, it makes everything so much easier later on.
Yeah, which means, you know, a regular visit to for acupuncture can, you know, go a long way over your life if you, you know, as part of your, you know, maintaining, you know, good health.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's usually something where, you know, I'll see a patient maybe weekly or fortnightly for a couple of months, and then everything's pretty good, everything's settled down, there's no period pain, or there's very minimal period pain, they can cope with it better, they can cope with it, just say, with the heat pack for a few hours on the first day, their menstrual cycles are regular, and then maybe in a year, like for a year I won't see them, and then they come back and they're like, oh, my period's becoming a little bit more painful lately, I thought I'd get on top of it sooner, so again, I just see them for maybe a month or so, a bit regularly. And in that way, if you can form a really good relationship with your acupuncturist or your herbalist, then you can kind of check in with them. It doesn't have to be, some people think, oh, once I start going, I'm going to just go there forever, but that's not necessarily the case. You can go for a short period of time and then take a break, and then if you see things crop up again, if you can get on top of it as early as possible, it makes the treatment becomes a lot faster each time around, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. As you said, you know, it's just as much a preventative
absolutely, yeah,
practice or medicine as it is good for helping with all of these, you know, symptoms and ailments and everything else. So your website is pointspecifics.com. So people can go there and have a look. You've got some articles and lots of information there. And you're in Kellyville in northwestern Sydney. And what other, if people are looking, obviously don't live in northwestern Sydney, and they're looking for a for some traditional Chinese medicine, what are you looking out for?
A reputable practitioner will usually be registered with an association. In Australia, the two most common associations are ACMA, so AACMA, the Australian Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine Association, or they're registered with ATMS, the Australian Traditional Medicine Society. And just recently, all Australian Chinese medicine practitioners have been approved by, I've forgotten the name, but it's a Western medicine board. So we've got now two registrations that we have to be associated with. A reputable practitioner will also, to have those registrations means then that you can claim from your private health funds. So sometimes acupuncture is sometimes there's a bad reputation, and it's usually,
well, because there's people who have done a quick acupuncture course, aren't there? And then there's,
that's right. So yeah.
So for example, physios might do a quick acupuncture course to assist the work that they're doing, but that's different to what you've done as someone who is a practitioner of traditional Chinese medicine, which is a whole degree.
That's right. That's right, yeah. So the physios, the chiros, the osteos, who do what they call dry needling, which is really just acupuncture, they've usually done some form of weekend course where they learn how to put needles into people. Acupuncturists do here in Australia. It's a four-year degree, a full-time degree at university. Usually the physios and whatnot are not associated with any acupuncture association unless they've done the full degree. So if you're looking for
they would have just learned something. Yeah. So imagine they just would have learned something specific. So, you know, releasing muscles or whatever they're doing.
Yeah. And they've gone to a weekend seminar about musculoskeletal pain, about, you know, where the points are for back pain and where the points are for shoulder pain or knee pain. And they learn how to put needles into those muscles. So they're not... they're not looking at the body as a holistic, they don't have that holistic approach. There's no way in the world that they would be doing what we call internal medicine, so that gynecological focus or digestive focus, which all acupuncturists and Chinese herbalists are, you know, they treat more that those conditions.
I think that's the key difference, like the person who's done the weekend acupuncture course to, which would enhance what they're doing, definitely. And then there's that's a good distinction to make, that the internal medicine, the traditional Chinese medicine, is really going to work on that whole body on such a deeper, holistic and deeper level. And that's where, that's what we've been talking about today.
Yeah. And just another, if you're looking for a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner and you're unsure where to start, a good thing is just to pull up a few names on Google, for example, and then give them a call and have a chat with them over the phone. You can usually get a really good vibe as to whether or not they're legit just by having a good conversation with them over the phone. If they've got enough time to talk to you about some of the issues that you want to be treated for, and if you get a good vibe from that, then they're usually, you know, a good person to see.
Yeah, that's right. And what I love about you is you're a doula too, so you totally understand, you know, the whole picture for women and how important it is and what a difference it makes their life when, you know, all of these times in our life as women are, you know, much more positive and empowering, which is what it's all about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It was excellent discussion. I'm sure it's helped a lot of people to understand a lot more of Chinese medicine, and in particular with women's health and children's health and what they can do to do that. But as you said, it's a whole science, it's a whole medicine, and people can come to a good traditional Chinese medicine practitioner for anything and everything.
That's right. Thank you for having me on the show, Tara. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's great. I'll talk to you later and I'll sign off now. Thanks again. So you can go to empoweringmotherhoodradio.com to listen to this podcast or back podcast when you want to come back and listen to other things. And we will see you next week. Thank you.
Thanks.
This is the EWN Radio Network.